This is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to another special episode of the Sky Blues Extra podcast, which is kindly sponsored by Shortland Horne, Coventry's leading estate agents. My name is Tom Ward and I'm joined this evening by Dave.
Evening, Tom.
Evening, mate. And I'm pleased to say we're also joined by Ian Davidson, who is the deputy chair of the Coventry City London Supporters Club, and he's also secretary of Sky Blues International. Now, the reason we have Ian with us this evening is because we're going to be doing an away day special and discussing all things away days. We'll also be bringing in comments from you, our listeners. You may have seen a few polls out on Twitter, which we got you to be involved in. So we will be reading out some of your comments and contributions as well. Evening, Ian. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks both for inviting me on. But I suppose the true answer to that is I'm missing my football.
Yeah, aren't we all, Ian? It's a shame. I was going to say, I know we've met many times and been on many trains to away days, and it's I'm definitely missing that sort of away day experience. But hopefully we can reminisce about some of the good times we've had over the last few years on the pod anyway. So, Ian, tell us a bit more about the Coventry City London Supporters Club and Sky Blues International, because I'm sure not all of our listeners will have heard of the support groups.
Certainly. The story goes back to November 1976, when 11 then young fellows who were working in London met in a pub and were talking about whether or not they had been to Villa Park the previous day, whether or not they'd seen the game on the highlights on the Midlands edition or the London edition. And they really decided that they needed to do something for long distance supporters. And that in November 1976, so the Coventry London Supporters Club was formed, and it's provided its members with group travel and a ticket collecting service for the last 40 odd years. In fact, we celebrate our 45th anniversary in November this year, subject to social distancing and all the rest of it, in open. Sky Blue International, which was the second part of your question, was something that came about by Jonathan Strange, who was the chairman at the time, and Joe Elliott at the club, to try and include international-based members. We have got some 250 international members. A lot of them are expats that were born in Coventry and have moved to live abroad. But we've also got a lot of Europeans, especially Scandinavians, that support Coventry for weird and wonderful reasons, like they had a Sky Blue support Subutio team, or they had kits that were not the big clubs, especially when we were in the Premier League. And we invite them over when they come to games. They come and join us. They'll come to the pub with us. We arrange tickets for them. So it's quite a inclusive type of supporters club whenever they're in the UK.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And it's great to hear that we've got fans, you know, all around the world, and it's great that we're able to sort of keep them engaged. I had one actually recently where a chap from Argentina actually messaged me on Instagram of all platforms and was saying he was a massive Coventry fan. And I was asking him, you know, how on earth did you come to follow the Sky Blues? And it was actually because he said he started a career on FIFA when we were in League Two, and he just picked a random team, got us promoted, and then he's followed the Sky Blues ever since. So, like you say, it's funny how people come to support the Sky Blues, isn't it?
Indeed. If you want a little fun story just to before we kick off about that, we have a couple of members from Switzerland, Albie and Andrea. And Albie, in the early 70s, was what he calls a newspaper Arsenal supporter. Mm. And he happened to be in London on business, and the people who we worked with said, "Oh, we're here tomorrow. How about going to the Arsenal game?" They played Coventry. And Coventry were beaten 5-1, but he went away and came back 6 months later. And lo and behold, Arsenal were playing that weekend in London again, and they were playing Coventry. And this time, Coventry drew, but he became a Coventry supporter. And I asked him why many years ago, and he told me that Emirates, even though they were winning 5-1, was so quiet, except the 1,500 or so Coventry supporters in the corner who never shut up the whole time. He met some of those Coventry supporters from the London Supporters Club on the tube back into central London, swapped telephone numbers, or it wasn't emails in those days, and next time he came over, arranged to meet them and went, and he comes over once or twice a year. So these are the funny ways that people get involved with Coventry supporters.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's brilliant to when you hear stories like that, isn't it? And obviously, Ian, you've supported the Sky Blues for a long time. When did you sort of start going?
My father taught me when I was 7 years old, and the back end of the 1961-62 season, Jimmy Hill had become manager just before Christmas, and so it was the end of that season. But then, of course, the next 4 to 5 seasons, we went from the bottom of the fourth division to promotion to the first division, which, of course, is the Premier League today. And, of course, as a 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old, I was hooked. You know, I went and became a season ticket holder with my father and family for a number of years. I moved to Kent in 87, but I've been a regular home and away supporter for all that time.
And Ian, tell us some of your favourite early memories, because obviously there was European football at that time. We'll move on to the 87 Cup final. But yeah, some of your earliest memories, what do you remember? And yeah, tell us about that.
OK, well, interestingly, of course, being a Sky Blue fan all the time has been a roller coaster. But certainly there were many highs, certainly in the Jimmy Hill days. And of course, there was the Midlands match of the century versus Wolves in 67. That was, of course, a big sort of memory, sitting on the side of the pitch like all the other kids at that time. But as you mentioned, the European games, one of my claims to fame, as I say it, is that I just started work at the Standard Triumph at the time, British Leyland as it became, and as a 16-year-old, I wanted to go to the European games, and my mum, bless her cotton socks, decided that she didn't know where Trakia or Plovdiv was, and therefore I wasn't to go as a 16-year-old. But I persuaded her that if we were to get through, I would be able to go to the next game. Of course, we did get through, and of course, we played Bayern Munich. So I have the pleasure of being able to say to people that I've seen 75% of Coventry's European games.
Yeah.
It is actually 3 out of 4, but the 75% sounds better.
Not a massive sample size, is it, Ian?
No. but I was in Munich the night we lost 6-1. So
yeah. Incredible memories, those, though. I've seen lots of the pictures, and funny enough, my dad went to the Trakia Plovdiv game, and the trampolines and the people on the trampolines and stuff like that. It's funny old pre-match entertainment, I think, wasn't there, when we saw it. But talk about the cup final. That must be, you know, a huge highlight in your, you know, time supporting the Sky Blues.
It was, and in fact, I was actually at the time about to leave Coventry to live in Kent, and I've actually moved in the August September time after the cup final, so I knew that was going to happen. So it was also a big change in my life. But yes, the cup final, the story that I often tell, and this probably is why I got the job at the CCLFC about booking pubs, my friends and family, there was 12 of us, went down in 3 cars, and we decided we'd go to a pub outside of Wembley, and we met in a pub in Alperton, and nowhere near the motorway, nowhere near the central London route. So we were the wrong side of Wembley from all the Coventry fans coming in. And on the Thursday night, I rang the pub and said, look, there's going to be 12 of us. Can we have some food? Oh, we don't do food on Saturday. Oh, come on, there's 12 of us. We're coming down for the match. And I persuaded them to do 12 steak and chips. And at 1 o'clock, we were the only Coventry fans in this pub. There was quite a few Spurs fans in there, but out came our 12 steak and chips. So, of course, all the Spurs fans were, oh, can we order some? No, sorry, we don't do food on Saturday. So, you know, that was a good one over from the Spurs game before the cup final even started. And, of course, everybody remembers Clive Allen scoring in the first minute. And in fact, we had Oggy down at the London Supporters Club about a year ago, and we asked him about you know, his views of the cup final, and he was telling us that John Sillett was saying to everybody, keep it tight, guys, keep it tight in those first few minutes. And of course, it was 2 minutes in that Allen scored, although Oggy at the meeting with the CCLFC members actually said no, it was 1 minute 48 seconds. He knew it exactly.
And Ian, we talked a bit at the start around the London Supporters Club and you know and Sky Blues International. How did you sort of get involved with the groups?
As I said, I moved to Kent in 1987, and I joined the London Supporters Club. I think I saw it in a programme in the London matches. We always used to, in those days, put a little advert in the programme. I suppose was a silent member for many, many years, because I used to travel to home and away games with my wife and 2 kids. And I suppose I went to the Q&As. And I read the magazines, and I went to the odd night game because I worked in central London with the group on the train. So I got to know a number of the members. And I was at the 35th anniversary in 2011 dinner, and there was lots of talk on our table about the magazine wasn't coming out because it was just too expensive and time-consuming to print and mail out. And I suggested that maybe I would be willing to try and produce an e-newsletter. So I joined the committee. I was now starting to travel more on my own. So I started to travel with the CCLFC members by train because my kids had gone to university and they'd left home and, you know, they didn't go to every game. From that period in 2011-12, I started being a member of the committee, started producing the newsletter, and that's really when I got really involved and has been involved ever since.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And obviously what you've recently done is written a book, which I know has recently been released, which, you know, we're really keen to hear more about that. It's titled A Football Real Ale Trail. And I know you chaps are very into your ale and obviously you go on a lot of the away days. So tell us a bit more about the book, Ian.
Yeah, it actually relates back to my starting of the e-newsletter. When games stopped after the Ipswich game last year, we decided that maybe there was time to sort of do a bit of spring cleaning on our website and whatever. And I took on the task of trying to list all the pubs that we'd visited over the last few years. And what I realised was that the very first pub email that I had done where we were going to meet was the Yeovil game in August 2012. And the last one we did, because of the curtailment of the season, was the Ipswich game last March, which was exactly the period of time that we were out of the Championship. Now, when I started to look at this and record the pubs, I started sort of mentioning to people about, oh, do you remember so-and-so? Do you remember this? And the story started to come. And in fact, because we weren't going to games and we weren't going to our real ale pubs, the book came about in that way, and it tells the story really of a group of regular travellers from the southeast in the 8 years that we were playing in the lower tiers of the EFL. It doesn't capture the football memories particularly. It's not a football book. I'm not trying to be a Jim Brown, but what it does do, it captures the stories and memories of. We actually went to 71 grounds in that 8 years, and we visited 127 pubs as our designated pub of the day.
It's a good effort.
And in those years, so we've got pictures in the book of the photos of the grounds, the pubs, and of course, lots of pictures of group of members on their days out. So the stories are really about the camaraderie, the pubs, and even the delights of travelling on our rail network. But of course, it wasn't always happy-go-lucky good stuff, because you have to remember, during this period, we were relegated to the fourth tier of the Football League, and sometimes the good days out were, as we started to say, were spoilt by the football. And there were occasions when it was seriously considered that we should stay in the pub. And these are all the things that have been lost by the pandemic, and therefore, hence the book came about, and I've had some interesting sort of responses for people that have had it. I even got the London supporters, the Blackpool London supporters chairman yesterday ordered one from me because he'd seen it by somebody from Exeter that had also picked it up. So it's not just around Coventry City. If you're a Coventry City fan and you're a real ale fan, it's great about some of the stories, but it becomes a reference for anybody that wants to go to some of the 72 grounds that we have played at over the last 8 years.
Yeah, no, exactly. I've read a lot of different accounts, and like you say, it doesn't always have to be Coventry fans that read these, is it? Because it's very much more about the day out, and like you say, a lot of those places that you attended, and some pub crawl. And I think, like you say, that the football was at times probably one that made you think about staying in the pub. I expect the rail network probably kept you in the pub longer than probably needed to at some times as well.
Indeed.
But talk to us about a typical away day, I suppose, with the London Supporters Club. You know, how does that start and finish, and perhaps the planning in before it? Because I know you're very keen to make sure everyone knows where they're going and you know, getting, like you did with the Wembley, a pub that you can actually go to, eat at, and not be sort of disturbed.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the best way of doing it, remember, away days for us include home games, because of course we're so basically what I've got in the book is a couple of chapters talking about us going to home games, and it's an away day. So basically there's normally about anything from a dozen to 20 or so people will travel from central London to games, and it starts at about 8:30. So at about 8:30 on Saturday morning, I will get dropped off at my local station. It's just a bit too far to walk, and it's in Country Lane. So I get the 8:30 train, 8:35 train that gets me into London about 9:45. I get up to Euston for about 10:15. Unfortunately, the next train from my local station doesn't get me there until about 10 to 11, and we were always on the 11:03 going to Coventry. So that first part of the journey is done on my own, and there's about a dozen or so other people that live in and around the London and the South East that are coming up on the Brighton line, or coming in from Upminster, or coming in from, you know, from wherever, all travelling on their own to get to Euston. We all meet at Euston at around 10:30 to 10:45, and we get on the 11:03. First stop is Rugby, and by the time we get to Rugby, you know, we're trying to organise what taxis are necessary to get us to the local pub in Coventry. So that happens sort of every week. Obviously, I'll come to Birmingham in a second. But then if it's an away game, an actual away game, then it's obviously it's Paddington. If it's the West Country, it may be King's Cross. And it may be even earlier. We have to, because, you know, sometimes we're leaving central London at about at sort of 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning. So that means we've still got an hour to get into London first. So that's so we get into wherever we're going to be. The golden rule is that we try to be in the pub at 12 o'clock. Wherever we're going, whether that's the Coventry pubs, the Northampton pub, or Birmingham, but we always sent out an email on the Wednesday or Thursday before every away game, telling people that were on our mailing list that this is where we were going to go, to a particular pub in wherever we were playing. And I would always, the week before, call the pub, email the pub, and tell them approximately how many people were coming. And regularly, when it was more than 20 or so, they'd say, could you pre-order your food for us? Not because they didn't want to make it strict, but it was, you know, you couldn't have 10 people turning up and saying, I want egg and chips, or beef burger and chips, or chicken and chips, or whatever it is. So they knew. So we'd always have to pre-order our food by the Thursday before the game, and we'd know when we'd go. Most of the time that worked perfectly. You know, there were a few occasions where double or triple the amount of people turned up that we didn't know about, just because they knew we were going to a decent pub.
So a few people had to share their egg and chips then.
Indeed, yes.
Brilliant. But and what about sort of some of the you know, further afield, I guess, some of the longer trips? How do they sort of, are they, do you always aim to be at 12 o'clock sort of for them if it's like Manchester?
That is our normal stance. So if I just give you an example of Hartlepool in the FA Cup back in about 2013, to get decent train prices, we had to get on a train that left King's Cross that got into Hartlepool at 11:05. The next one was something like 1 o'clock, so it's too late. So the pub we were going to didn't open until 12, so we had to go somewhere else first. But yeah, that was always the plan, is to try and get there for about 12 o'clock. So our whole journey time and ticketing was picked on the basis of a 12 o'clock arrival time. And Simon Fahey and Adrian Hawthorne, over the last 8 or 9 years, have been our travel secretaries at CCLFC, and they would book tickets certainly 6, maybe even 12 weeks in advance to get advance tickets.
Yeah, you really have to be on it. I must admit, Tom's probably our unofficial guy for that. So, but yeah, you do. You have to really plan these things ahead, because the prices of some of those, you know, especially the far sort of up northern ones, can be colossal, can't they? And you know, it's, you know, the fixture list is there. You know you're going to go, so it makes complete sense to do that.
It must be tricky with the TV games. I know now we're in the Championship, we seem to be on TV every week. That must cause you a bit of aggro in terms of games getting moved and your train tickets and things.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And fortunately, we in the time when we're in the bottom of the of League One and League Two, that didn't happen that often. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The cancellation, I remember one time when. There was a number of us going up to Carlisle and we played Preston in the, I'm going to say the Checker Trade Trophy, but it probably wasn't back in those days. And that game was moved to Sky on a Thursday night. So at the last minute, about 2 or 3 weeks before, they moved the Carlisle game from Saturday to Sunday morning. So, of course, that meant all our train tickets, very expensive ones, were sort of cancelled. We managed in that case to get most of the tickets back by pleading with the train company because we wanted to buy other tickets for later on.
No but easy task, that,
still
is it?
Went on the Sunday and, of course, had to buy tickets at a very expensive, buy them a week or so before.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
We put out a question on our Twitter page this week for our followers to describe their perfect away day. So we kind of gave some categories for people to answer, and they were breakfast of choice, mode of transport, pre-game drink, halftime snack, and favourite away end. We also asked people to share their favourite away day photo, and we had some brilliant responses. So I'll just read a few of these out now. So Joey C said he'd go for a Spoons brekkie, take the train, beer of choice beer Moretti, he'd go for a Balti pie, and he said best away ends, Grimsby, Barnet for the bar downstairs, Notts County and Port Vale. Yeah, Barnet was a good one, actually, wasn't it, for that bar, Ian?
Yes, yeah.
Remember that one? It was a
we don't drink in grounds, but I'll come to that later.
Yeah, sure. Pretty drab game, if I remember, but quite bar in the ground. Julian Foster says breakfast, McDonald's, double sausage and egg McMuffin. There's a bit of a theme with McDonald's breakfast, we noticed, with our followers. Travel, Virgin Pendolino. I think it's changed to Avanti now, but we'll let you off.
Yeah.
Pre-game, a local real ale bar. You'd probably appreciate that, Ian. He goes for chicken Balti pie as well, and his favourite away end is Peterborough. Again, another good away end and one where we've got some great results. Amar Singh goes for a Spoons breakfast, travelling by train. His pre-game drink would be a Carling, half-time snack cheeseburger, and his favourite away end is Fleetwood. I'll just read out a couple more. So who have we got here? Ollie says a good bacon sarnie, a virgin train, warm hot chocolate before a cold game, steak and ale pie at halftime. And he says Milton Keynes in the FA Cup when Biamo scored, mental.
Yeah,
some good kind of memories there and some good away-ins that we've been to.
The Virgin train, Tom's got to be. Is it? What is it? What is it? Is it the Spirit of Coventry? What was it called? Always used to see that, isn't it?
It's
always
a good
omen.
One, isn't it?
Always a good omen if you get on that one, which is that they've named the train the Spirit of Coventry or something like that. But it just shows you, doesn't it, the amount of people that replied back to that tweet, of how many people are obviously missing these away days, but just about how much it's so much more to people than the 90 minutes that they obviously watch, you know, Coventry, and it's all about the day, isn't it?
The thing about the breakfast and the halftime steak and kidney pie or whatever, we tended not to do that because most of us were leaving, as I said, at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, not 9 o'clock. So hot food was one of the prerequisites of the pub we were going to. So we would always, as I said, pre-order food. And we've had some fantastic Thai, Peterborough, we've had sort of curries made for us from pubs that didn't do food. But when they knew there was 30 or 40 of us turning up, they'd do a one-pot curry for us at Cheltenham and Burton and this sort of thing. So we tended to have a hot meal at the 12:30 time. So therefore, that was our main meal of the day, and then it was a virgin sandwich on the way home, maybe as we were getting back on the train afterwards.
Yeah, and we've all got our favourites, especially us guys that come back into London. Of course, a lot of the pubs around London after a home or away game, we'll be able to jump into one of them when we get back. But Ian, sort of tell us about some of the favourite pubs that you visited across the country, I think, in perhaps for away days. Maybe some that, maybe even in the Championship, where people can go and get a really good real ale pint from perhaps something, an excerpt from the book.
Okay. Let me, if I can just preface that by saying that London Supporters Club's pre-match experience is going to be different to what a lot of other supporters.
Yeah, I saw, of course.
Or some of the tweets, they were talking about the Ipswich away fans pub at, opposite the station.
Yeah.
Because of the travel problems at Ipswich last year, I and a number of other members got there early and went in there. And I'm really pleased that we didn't have to stay because it was plastic glasses, there was heavy security, and it got so crowded that nobody could get served. So we got our own pub 20 minutes away that was absolutely superb, and we've got a meal laid on, we've got four or five real ales. So our experience is something different to others. Other people want atmosphere and they want sort of lagers in plastic glasses. So our view may be different to others, but that doesn't make ours right and theirs wrong or the other way around. So I just wanted to say that first of all. But in terms of some of the sort of pubs, I mean, you mentioned Wembley early on. I mean, the two that stand out are the central London pubs before the two Wembley games. We've got a landlord at the Calthorpe Arms where we have all our Q&As and, you know, Mark Robbins comes down and he's a Coventry supporter.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and he opened on the Chequered Shed final day between at 10:30, so we could all get fed, we could all meet, and there was probably 100-150 people turned up from all over the world to collect their tickets, including, I mentioned about the Norwegians. I think that morning, because Barry wasn't there, he was our ticket man, I handed over 29 tickets for the Norwegian group that we'd managed to get for them all in one area so they could stick with us. So the Calthorpe Arms was there. With the Notts County game for the Exeter final, there wasn't time for us to talk to the club about getting tickets together. So what we did is we did our own Wembley trio. We said to anybody that was a season ticket holder, if you can get six tickets, please get six tickets. And therefore, if you don't need six, please let us have the other three, but get them in the same block. So we managed to get close on 200 tickets in the same block for London supporters that we. But of course, we couldn't post them out. So again, before the exit of the game, everybody had to meet at the Feathers in Westminster because Adrian at the Calthorpe wanted to go this time, so he wasn't going to open his pub beforehand. So we all met at the Feathers. So those two pubs stand out as being great days. The beer tasted so much better because we were on our way to Wembley, etc. But to answer your question about pubs far around the country, over the last few years, we've played some sides many times and other sides only played once. So the Peterboroughs, the Warsaws and the Doncasters spring straight to mind. The Brewery Tap at Peterborough with its Thai restaurant is superb. And we must have been there six or seven times, I think, in the last few years. The Black Country Arms in Warsaw. We used to get lots of funny looks because our group from London would still be on the train as it pulled out of Bescot. And everybody else had got up at Bescot because we went on into Warsaw to have our drink and then got the train back just before the game. But the West Black Country Arms, again, a great pub. The Corner Pin at Doncaster, never disappointed. And they had absolutely superb and humongous Yorkshire dinners where you actually had your dinner, actually your roast, actually in a Yorkshire. So we go there regularly. And in fact, the last couple of seasons, we've actually awarded a pub of the season. Based on the real ale, the food, the welcome we got, and the atmosphere. And the Coach and Horses at Shrewsbury was our pub of the year 2 years ago. And last year, it was actually the Steamboat Tavern at Ipswich, which was on our only visit. But just to final give you a far away one that unfortunately we're not going to be able to go to anymore, at our AGM regularly, we would say that if you only do one North West away day, then you must go to Bury. Because of the trackside bar, it was an absolute must. And on the two or three occasions that we went there, we'd often link in with a steam rally. So therefore, you'd have steam trains, proper steam trains, pulling into the East Lancs railway station bar was. And the savvy drinkers amongst us would make certain that they'd always got their next round in before the train pulled in, because the people were getting off to have their drink and then going on for the rest of their rally. So that worked well. But yeah, the trackside inn, absolutely superb. But they say there is 127 pubs in the book. Most of them are very very good real ale pubs in that way. There were one or two that didn't work out for various reasons that I do explain. But we do speak to the landlord beforehand, so they know they're coming, and we know that, and they know how many of us are coming.
Yeah, that's brilliant, Ian. So many pubs on the list that you've been to. Just wanted to read out some of our listener comments as well on the pubs. As you say, in probably slightly different taste to the London Supporters Club. But Spud says the Foresters Arms in Southend. Ian Sky Blue says, I love the Bull's Head at Port Vale Away.
That's on our list.
That's one of yours. That's good. Richard Hannah says Bar 7 in Crewe. I don't know if you remember that one, Dave. It was a bit of a dive in there, but that was always rocking pre-game. Tony Young says Strawberry Gardens in Fleetwood. And Gavin Adair says the Green Man in Wembley Beer Garden was always a great atmosphere. Yeah, I think that was a highlight for a lot of people. Alex Smith says King George the V at Walsall all the way, half pub, half curry house, one of the best curries I've ever had. Craig Long says the Drake at Arms in Arsenal Highbury, also the Springbok in QPR back in the day as well. So a few there from our listeners as well in terms of their favourite pubs.
And moving on to away grounds, Ian, you mentioned there about how many you've visited, you know, the Coventry London Supporters Club. What would be, it's very difficult, I think, to put your favourite away ground. For me up there, I mean, Fratton Park, just for the complete nostalgia of it. I love that place, and I think, you know, we haven't been there, but Craven Cottage would be a ground that I'd love to visit with Coventry. But yeah, tell us about maybe your favourite away ground, and then some that would make the list.
Yeah, sure. I suppose if I think back over the last few years, clearly that evening at Notts County has got to be one that, you know, again, the Meadow Lane is an old stadium with that big stand. We always tended to take large amounts of support, so that was always a fantastic sort of atmosphere. I was fortunate enough to be at Liverpool when Unlove scored his hat-trick in the Cup against them. And, of course, you know, to actually win at Liverpool against the Kop, and when the Kop was in full swing, I mean, that's, again, a fantastic sort of away ground. But the old White Hart Lane is still one of my favourites, because it was one of the last large old grounds before they all started to get knocked down and rebuilt.
Yeah.
And of course, we went there in 2013 in the Cup, when it was still, you know, the old ground. I mean, you know, we haven't been to play at the new ground. But that was always one of my favourites, because maybe again because, you know, we'd had some relegation escapes there where we had to win on the last day of the season. So it was always a favourite. I always looked forward to going to White Hart Lane. Because
it's a long walk down from the tube, though, isn't it?
And if you get
the bus and stuff, it's a bit of a... It seems like a really easy ground to get to, but it's a hell of a walk if you take it on. But it's it really is a lovely, lovely traditional ground, you know, the old White Hart Lane, and it almost, like you say, a shame, but what a beast the new one is, I suppose.
Yes, indeed.
And thinking about the worst ground you've ever been to, Ian, there's probably quite a few on this list, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I suppose the one that always stands out is the old Colchester ground at Layer Road. I mean, if anybody ever went there, I think there was one ladies' toilet, there was two cubicles for blokes, and that was it. And you'd have sort of regularly several hundred Coventry fans there. It was dreadful. But fortunately, they built a new stadium there. But also, I suppose, the away terracing at Wimbledon, at King's Meadow, where they're no longer playing, but where we were, because again, if you were on the halfway line, you were looking through.
Dreadful. You
were looking through where the players were sitting and the managers were sitting, so you couldn't see the pitch at all in a lot. But also Bristol Rovers is another absolutely awful ground.
Yeah, it's so cold as well.
But you've mentioned Fratton Park a second ago. I would add the toilets at Portsmouth.
Oh, no.
It's the worst category.
Yeah.
They
and the tuck shop.
Awful,
I mean,
toilet.
The tuck shop. Yeah.
The tuck shop. It's no better than a tuck shop from what I remember at school. It's awful. Like, you know, if you get a cup of tea, the tea bag's probably been in four other cups, I expect. It's really, really, really is a poor. You know, the atmosphere of the away end at Fratton Park is brilliant, but the facilities do leave a lot to be desired, don't they?
And the man with the bell. I mean, that all off with that one. Yeah.
But we've had some good nights, luckily, I think, at Fratton Park.
We have.
Good days. So it's treated us well. But indeed. Tom, what would be your worst ground?
Yeah, I was going to say notable mention for me would have to go to Newport. Newport was pretty dire a few years ago.
Yeah.
Open Terrace again. And the other one was Forest Green. I don't know if you went to that one, Ian.
I did, yeah. With the rain,
pretty bad, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was awful. Yeah, I'd say Bristol Rovers and Forest Green. I think I would put together. Yeah, you're right, Tom. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's when it's got an open roof, it's not great, is it? Because you don't get much of an atmosphere. It's hard to hold the noise in, and it's just cold and a bit miserable. So, yeah, prefer to have a roof on an away end if possible. Which now we're in the Championship should be something we see more and more.
Yeah, exactly. And Tom, what about favourites? Because you never mentioned yours. Did you have one that you...
I mean, for me, I love Fratton Park as well. I think it's probably one of my favourites. Always enjoy going there. I'd have to say Notts County is a good one as well.
Yeah.
Notts Forest, actually, to be honest, is a great one. Always enjoyed going there. Bramwell Lane is up there for me as well. I was actually mascot there, as you chaps probably know. So that's one that I really like. Hillsborough is a great one. There's quite a few, but I think the theme really similar to you chaps
is the grounds I prefer.
You know, I'm not a massive fan of the new grounds, really. They lack a bit of atmosphere. They're always a bit outside the town or city or whatever. So
you look at things like Oxford, for example, Tom. I mean, from an away day point of view, it's very difficult, isn't it? I'm sure Ian planned well advanced in that one and was probably better than us. But it's always a bit of a nightmare, Oxford, especially if you plan taxis and stuff. It can be a bit of a pain. But
yeah, well, I think we missed the first 10 minutes of the last time we played there, didn't we?
Yeah,
which is ridiculous. Because of the taxis, but yeah, no, the ones that are right in the town are the ones that are the best for me.
No more than any was of course the old Highfield Road, which was a smashing ground in the town, wasn't it? Pretty much, you know, it wasn't in amongst the houses, very old traditional ground, and I'm sure Ian, like a lot of our followers and supporters, you miss that ground a lot.
I think absolutely. I mean, you know, I can understand the reasons why they were looking to move. I think the reasons behind it might not be now with hindsight, but, you know, I do get that. And
it's the way football was going at that time wasn't it?
It was, you know, and, but I think to Tom's point, you know, the new grounds that have struggled are the ones like Bolton, like Derby, that are on the outskirts of towns, like the Rico, and it becomes a car park. Apart from match day, they really are struggling with them. And you know, I think the Tottenham one is hopefully the way new grounds are going to move. It was built on the same, nearly on the same site, and it's a proper football stadium. It's not a bowl with sort of no atmosphere. So, you know, things are changing. So, you know, as we go around and try to build our new ground at some point, if that ever comes about, then hopefully, you know, we take that into account. You know, we don't want a bowl stuck out somewhere with no transport links.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like you say, the transport links, and if we can take some learnings from some of the recent grounds that have been built. Then, you know, hopefully we'll have a much better stadium. Well, even to have any stadium at this point would be good. But yeah, just moving on a little bit. We also asked our followers this week around their coldest ever away day they've been on. Ian, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's got to be Wickham in February 2018. Yeah. Got to be. I think it's
a unanimous winner, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was terrible. And of course, the problem with Wickham is that there's only one pub in the Sands area of High Wickham, and even that's something like a 10-15 minute walk from the ground.
Yeah.
So you've got to walk and you can't park, and it's just an awful place to go, Wickham. But no, that's got to be. But I say the other miserable times are the pouring rains we talked about, and you're getting cold, and you mentioned Forest Green, we've talked about Bristol Rovers, you know, they were horrendous days, and you know, and of course if you don't win, which we didn't at Bristol and Forest Green, it does make the journey home when you're wet, cold and miserable.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that Wickham one was cold. One thing I will say about that, though, that I found quite funny is that every time it gets talked about, it seems to get a degree colder. So even our very own Dean Atkinson replied to the tweet saying Wickham away minus 10 degrees. Now, it was pretty cold that night, but I don't think it was quite minus 10.
No.
Dean does claim that the wind chill factor might have had a bearing on that.
Yeah, I think he's getting mixed up with some ski resorts there.
Exactly. So yeah, it was cold, but not sure it was quite that cold. But the Mark McNulty penalty definitely warmed everyone up a little bit. Yeah. Al Lockhart says Carlisle away December 2018 dropped about 10 degrees from leaving Coventry and blowing a hooli. We won 1-0, thawed out on the coach home. Yeah, I remember that one. That was a pretty cold day out, but a good win at the time, I think.
Yeah.
Spud says Scunthorpe away when there was snow on the ground. Can't quite remember that one. Mm-hmm. Ian Skyblue brings out one that I think I've heard about a lot. Wimbledon away when they were at the MK Hockey Stadium was ridiculously freezing.
Yeah. Yes.
I remember, going to the... I'm trying to think what fixtures, but I remember going when I think Joachim scored a hat-trick or something.
That rings a bell.
Year. But that was really cold. And you also, you know, if it blew any, you know, the wind blew anymore, you was on a put-up stand. You know, you're a bit worried about health and safety, whether it is even going to make it through the game. It was, pretty makeshift ground, that one, Ian.
Very much so. I mean, because Wimbledon's one of those teams that, you know, if you're old enough and maybe ugly enough, you've probably seen us play at the Palace, at the hockey stadium, at now the MK Dons stadium, now it's and I think also at Charlton or something, or Palace, so you've seen them all over the place, Plough Lane, so this is definitely a sort of a one that you think back and you think, yes, it was cold.
Yeah, definitely. Dave on Twitter, who's at Temple Row, he says the Rico is the coldest ground he's ever been in. And I have to say that the Rico is always pretty cold, actually. That's something I definitely noticed. Monty says Fleetwood 2019 without a doubt. We have to say the wind does rip across that ground at Fleetwood, doesn't it, Ian?
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
yes. Very cold.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot to our listeners for your views on that. Some good memories. It seems like we've tended to win on those cold away days, which is interesting. Now, Ian, you talked about some of your train journeys and sort of leaving very early in the morning. Now, I'm sure you've probably had some issues with train delays. What tell us some stories around that. Have you ever been stuck in the pub somewhere, perhaps?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, but interestingly, you'd think that the Carlisles, the Plymouths, the Hartlepools would be the long journeys. It's actually, they're not the long journeys. The long journeys tend to be when you have to change, either at Preston to get to Morecambe or to Accrington or Burnley, or you go to Nottingham and then go out to Doncaster and Scunthorpe. That adds much more to the journey time. But interestingly, the longest journey tends to be Shrewsbury, would you believe? Because it seems to be that the only trains that you can get from Wolverhampton to Shrewsbury seem to stop at every station, and therefore it takes nearly as long from Wolverhampton to Shrewsbury as it does to get from London to Wolverhampton. So that's one of our longest in time. But you talked about sort of delays. I mean, we had a 90-minute delay coming back from Accrington a few years ago, and we just left Preston and gone to Warrington, and we had a 90-minute delay. And on our carriage, because they'd got advance tickets as well, there was a group of Bournemouth supporters. They'd played at Wigan that day, and they took the great delight throughout this 90 minutes of the delay and on the journey home, telling us how much Callum Wilson was scoring for fun and how much they'd got him on the cheap, and it really didn't help. So not only did we have the long delay, because of course if there are delays, it does affect people like me who have got nearly an hour when you get back to London to get home. The Coventry trains, the Virgin one, and again, you'll probably remember this, Tom, we used to get the one just before 6 o'clock or just after 6 o'clock, depending on what was the best deal. But it always followed the slow London Midland train coming in from Birmingham. Then he couldn't pass it until he got to Coventry. And it was always late. and therefore that 2 or 3 minutes or 10 minutes being late often meant that we we missed a connection. Some of us missed connections. So, for example, I'd got 2 an hour. So if I and I just get one, otherwise I've got half an hour wait. So having just travelled all this time, you're then sitting in central London on your own, having dashed off. So you haven't gone to the pub with your mates because you're thinking you can get that train, to miss it because the London Midland train had been slow coming through Berkswell, Tylehill and Camberley.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
And what about away day? Is there any stories that you've got from your away days that perhaps in the book or not in the book that has just been particularly funny?
Yeah, okay, well, yeah, there are some amusing ones. I mean, somebody talked about earlier about the Strawberry Gardens at Fleetwood being a pub that they quite liked. We seem to play Fleetwood about 6 or 7 times in the last 7 or 8 years, but all but once it was midweek, so therefore it always meant staying over in Blackpool, etc. But people, if you went to the Strawberry Gardens in the early days, Sid Little of Little and Large used to run the little restaurant which was attached to the Strawberry Gardens on a franchise.
Right.
So Sid Little was very famous for coming out and wanting to do the service himself, which meant that if you weren't sitting down at 5:15, you didn't get served by 7 to go to the game, because he was so slow wanting to have photographs, talk to everybody, etc. But he was a great comedian, and it really made the night. But our group sitting there one evening, and Sid comes round and hands out all the fish and chips to everybody, and one of the guys says, excuse me, Sid, I ordered mushy peas. And Sid Little, being ever the comedian, just turned around and says, you've got a fork, and off he walked. He did come back a couple of minutes later with a bowl of mushy peas for him. But, you know, that was his sort of answer. If you want mushy peas, mash them yourself. The other one that became folklore, though, and this is, I suppose, it's funny, peculiar. We were at Swindon 2012-2013, and I'd spoken to a pub called The Glue Pot, which again became one of our favourites, earlier in the week, and said, yeah, there'd be 25-30 of us turning up. Yeah, looking forward to seeing you guys again. And I'm out with my wife at dinner on the Friday night. And my BlackBerry, and people might remember BlackBerries if they're old enough, but my BlackBerry kept buzzing and going. And my wife was getting really annoyed with me because I was trying desperately not to answer it. But I eventually did. And it was somebody that said, I've just called the Glue Pot because your email, Ian, said that they were only doing rolls. They weren't doing hot meals. And he tells me they're not open. Now, look, I've spoken to him on Wednesday night. It is open. So anyway, when I got back home, I called the Glue Pot, and the landlord said, oh, the police intelligence officer called me this afternoon to say they'd picked up internet traffic that was suggesting that there was going to be an organised fight between Swindon and Coventry supporters outside the Glue Pot. So he's not being allowed to open. So, of course, this is nobody got iPhones and all the rest of it. So, you know, we're desperately trying to get hold of people to make certain that we're going to change pubs because we've got people collecting tickets, etc. Anyway, we went to the Great Western. If you've been to Swindon, it's the big pub directly opposite. It's often an away, designated away pub.
Yeah, it's one of each opposite station, isn't there? It's a home and an away pub.
That's right. Yes. So anyway, we get escorted in there, and we're in there. And unfortunately, the landlord didn't know he'd got 30 odd people turning up at 12 o'clock that were all wanted food. And unfortunately, chef didn't turn up that day. So he ended up giving us chips and sausage free, just big bowls of chips and sausage. I think him and his wife, that's anything they could do. But the point of the story is, at about 2:30, in comes a whole load of police. Okay, guys, we're going to escort you to the ground. So anyway, we walk outside, and there are 3 police horses, there are 2 police vans, and there are more police than there are Coventry London supporters. And we get escorted to the ground. The traffic gets stopped as we go across all the roads and all the islands. The only thing we can think of is that somebody, for some whatever reason, had picked up my copy of my email that had gone out, and of course it said London supporters, and we did joke about whether or not we should actually code where we were going from in the future. But there were stories about the police saying that day to people in the group, we thought you'd be younger, we didn't realise you were going to be that old. You know, with, you know, but there is a couple of pictures in the book of the police horses and the police vans as we're all being marched along the road. So that was a particularly good one. And the other one that I do like, if anybody had actually remember the Father Ted story when none of the priests can get out of the lingerie department. We were going to Rochdale and train disruptions, that there was going to be a northern train strike, which meant that there was no trains from Manchester to Rochdale, but the Metro link was going to work, but which takes 50 minutes rather than 15. But okay, we had to do, but you end up in Rochdale at the wrong end of Rochdale. So we went to a pub we'd never been to before, called the Bourne, and which we've been back to subsequently. But this first day, when we come out of the station, my phone is telling me, and as did my directions, that it was a 10-minute walk. But it looked as though there was a big shopping centre in front of us. So we said, oh, well, we'll walk through the shopping centre. So anyway, the 10, 12 of us, or whoever it is on this this group, walked into the shopping centre. And lo and behold, my Google Maps iPod suddenly went, 2 minutes. Oh, it's good. I told you it was quicker. So we walked through this shopping centre, get to the other end, and there's no exit. We couldn't find an exit anywhere. So we're then walking door to door like Father Ted trying to get out. And we eventually found a security officer who... said, oh, no, you've got to go right back to where you've come from and walk all the way around because there isn't an exit. And we said, oh, no. He says, look, I tell you what, guys, if you go up the lift here and to the management services, there's a door into the car park. As you go into the car park, you'll see the pub opposite. So anyway, we all trundle up this lift. We go out into the car park and we can't see the pub, but there's an entrance opposite. We go through this entrance and we end up back in the shopping centre again. And we think, oh, no. We walk round, we come back out, and as you come out that door, you could see the pub. So anyway, we get to the pub about 25 minutes late because we've been walking around this shopping centre. But lots of other people that had either parked their car or had come separately had the same problem trying to find this pub. So that's another one that becomes instantly talkable by London supporters. But also the rag pudding that you had at that pub. That was like a suet meat pie, but became one of the must-have meals when you went back.
Well, you needed it after all that walking.
Exactly.
Brilliant. And just moving on a little bit, Ian, just wanted to get your thoughts on last season. Obviously, it was a brilliant season, winning League One. Lots and lots of highlights. We asked quite a lot of people on the pod this. It'd be interesting to get your view on sort of, I guess, when you, one, felt like we were going to get promoted and, two, win the league.
I think we'd struggled away from home right up until the Wickham game, just before Christmas. Of course, winning at Wickham and Tranmere away and Godden scoring a hat-trick on both occasions, that was, you know, that was it. We were, you know, we're about to get there now. So those were the two that I think convinced us that was one of my favourite games of the season. But the one that I felt early on in the season that really showed the determination that it could be our year was when we got that draw at Portsmouth with the nine men. It was in one of those games where you said, you know, I was there category.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you there. And the other question that we ask a lot on the podcast and we've asked our followers a lot of times is about a bit of fun, about your sort of best or greatest Sky Blues 11. And of course, you know, you would have seen countable amount of players come through and wear the Sky Blue shirt. So from the goalkeeper to the front man, what does that look like, Ian?
Ooh, that's a tricky one, because again, you know, we had 30 odd years in the Premier League. You know, we've had League three, Division 3 and 4 in old money, and plus the other one. But I mean, goalkeeper has got to be between Oggy and Bill Glazier, because again, Bill Glazier, I think, you know, he would have played for England, I think, if he hadn't broken his leg just before the World Cup. He would have been the third keeper. So I really can't. I don't know. It's between those two. If I could have one on the bench, I'd have one on the bench. But they're the two. I think the back three, if we're going to play the current system, it's got to be George Curtis. It's got to be Big Mo. It's got to be Gary Gillespie, I would have thought.
And then those wing back positions.
Oh well, Nielsen takes the right hand.
Yeah, one, hands down.
Without a shadow of a doubt, he was just pure class. We were so lucky to have him for the years we did. I was a big fan of Chris Catlin, But I think Stuart Pearce also probably just pushes him out as, in terms of that sort of left-hand side. The midfield, this is another one because we've had so many different people. But I think Doyle and Mortimer in the middle. And I think Dave Bennett and Tommy Hutchinson as the two wide players in terms of the four. But that doesn't give a place for Ian Gibson, because Gibbo was one of my heroes in the 60s. And then, of course, up front, George Hudson, if he'd have been playing today, would he have been as good? I don't know. Football was different, but he was just, there were stories of people going to Northampton rather than going to the Coventry game when he moved, just because he was such a figure of, that everybody loved. Wow. So he was one. Robbie Keane had just the one season with us and was brilliant. But, I've got to think about people like Cyril Regis and Ian Wallace. So the striking up front, in his D on his lots. But I suppose if I had to pick, I'd probably go with Regis and Hudson.
Ian, it's been great having you on the podcast. Really appreciate you coming on. It's great to hear, all of your stories about the Coventry City London Supporters Club and Scarborough Dees International. Some cracking stories there and everything. Just really hope we can be, back on a train soon, chewing the fat over all things Sky Blue.
Indeed. And thank you for giving me the opportunity. And as I say, if anybody does want to have a read of, what we've been up to for the last 8 years, there is a number of amusing stories in the book. As I say, there is a football element to it and all the results and everything are there. But a lot of it is around the travel difficulties, the pubs and the camaraderie. So, thanks very much for having me on. And hopefully, as you say, we'll get back to watching football sooner rather than later.
Yeah, definitely. And Ian, just remind our listeners where they can find the book.
It's on Amazon. Yeah, so it's called A Football Real Ale Trail, Away Days with Coventry City London Supporters Club in the Wilderness Years 2012 to 2020.
Brilliant. Yeah, and we'll make sure we send the links out on Twitter so our listeners can find that. And we thoroughly recommend having a read. And, like we said, hopefully we can all be on those away days again soon. That's all we've got time for this evening. Thanks to all of our followers for your comments and your contributions. And remember, if you want to get involved with anything we talk about on the podcast, just make sure you use the hashtag SkyBluesExtraPodcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra Podcast.